at these officials sometimes, some wanting to find out answers, but some really screaming at them, when are you going to lock up these murderers? Why aren't you doing anything? Tell us now. No, tell us now. Why aren't you locking up these murderers? And you know, the mood would get more and more volatile as the evening went on. We occasionally had rather difficult scenes in the church. On one scrutiny committee, a scuffle broke out amongst people, and my smallest church member who happened to be there, a very small lady called Eileen from Montserrat, said, Rev, don't you think you should be doing something about this? I thought, well, you know, there's just me. There's about 10 people in a scuffle and they're all bigger than me. No, I think there's nothing I can do about it at all, actually. But the council soon decided that meetings, even in our building, were unsafe, and they had to move them back to the town hall. They couldn't guarantee the safety of public officials, and I think they were probably right to make that unfortunate, well, that difficult kind of decision. But we did see anger boiling over, and yet with retrospect, I think lots of us do feel that actually allowing people to be able to vent that and to be heard has helped in the long run, because it's allowed people to recognise that actually there's that whole disjunct between what people think they're doing and how it's being perceived on the ground. Next slide. I can probably whisper that very quickly. We just tried to offer safe spaces, and I think that's still a role for church in all kinds of situations, about offering safe spaces where people can simply pray and be sad, and where it's okay to express those things, as well as anger. I've talked about the public meetings. And people where they know they're not going to be judged or need to comply in a certain way. There are a number of Muslims, for instance, who will sneak into the church on rare occasions now with their prayer mats and pray inside the Methodist church. I don't let our hierarchy know about this because it's not allowed. But sometimes I think we have more Muslims praying in our church than we have Christians praying in our church. And, well, I'm glad that people are praying, really. And it is, you know, as long as it's done discreetly, it's a place which people own. And a lot of people now in the community say, that's my church. It may not be the church they're going to go to on a Sunday. And indeed, quite a few people say, that's my church, and they're Muslim. And they're going to remain Muslim, but they still regard it as their church. And I think that's quite an interesting feature, really, of a sense of ownership and indeed support for the Christian community in the local area. And the whole issues about hospitality and how you are used, occasionally abused, but I think it's definitely worth the risk. And if there's anything I would want to summarise about the church's mission where we are, it's a mission of hospitality. That might not be appropriate in every situation, but certainly where we are, where our main asset in a very small congregation is the plant that we've got to offer and the resources that we've got at our disposal, and to be able to say to the community, well, this is your space as well as our space. And although there are boundaries upon the use of that space, you know, we want to work in partnership with you rather than saying you can only use it for this, or you can only do it if you do it in this particular way. Next one. I'm running out of time, I know, so I'll be one of the difficult issues, I suppose the bigger kind of philosophical issue, is to do with what is truth. When people are saying we've never been listened to, and you also have people from the local authority and the TMO who run the housing who say, but we've been doing this and this and this and this for years, and we've been trying to listen to you. Usually those people get shouted down in meetings and feel their voice has never been heard. And indeed, many of them are people, because of the criminal investigation and the public inquiry, feel they've never had the chance to have their say, though I've heard from quite a few of them over the last 2 years or so, and they feel very unfairly vilified. But I think it's also the case that there's an awful lot of people locally who genuinely feel they have not been listened to, despite the endless consultations that may have happened over housing issues in recent years. And it makes me think, therefore, about, well, what does good listening actually look like? And sometimes the models that perhaps the local authority has used have not been the best ones for actually really getting to the heart of how local people think or feel. Many local people who will instantly dismiss anything that comes from a local authority. You may remember that the local authority were specifically discouraged from attending the St. Paul's service 6 months after the Grenfell Tower fire. The Bishop of London rang them up, Bishop of Kensington rang them up and said, "I'm sorry, but you are not welcome at this gathering. And if you do come, many of the bereaved and survivors will walk out." That's a difficult call to make. Actually, to say to people, "You are not welcome at a Christian service." But so high is the feeling of distrust and indeed blame, which has become very difficult when you're then being housed by a local authority that you blame, many of them blame, for the fire in the first place, or at least being a very significant factor in the fire taking hold in the way that it did. It creates a very difficult dynamic, and one of the things we still find in the local area is there's no grace. There's no room in the middle at all for people saying, "Let's be reasonable and let's try and work this out." You're either on one side, you're a collaborator, or everything that RBKC do is rubbish. You know, and if you don't agree that everything they do is rubbish, you'll get fairly short shrift in North Kensington. And one of the things I think the faith community needs to do is actually put a wedge there and try and open up some ways of negotiation between communities that really don't trust each other at all. But that's the way down the line, I suspect. And the whole experience of truth, where people have all kinds of different identities, you know, they're African and British, Muslim and Christian in the same family, not infrequently. And what exactly is the truth of my experience if I feel that I've been ignored for all these years? Is that really the case? Or have I been made to feel that by, well, all kinds of procedures and routes? Next one. Sorry, I'm going through that very quickly so I can get through the rest before you all die of boredom. The lessons learned, I think for us, were about being prepared, which means just having things available. Being prepared. Things like knowing each other's contacts, who our partners are, either in a local authority or the other services like social services or amongst the faith community, knowing who to contact, being visible and being practical, and being flexible, I suggest, might be another one. Being prepared to adapt when you don't know what the situation is going to be like and you have to let other people have a certain amount of authority and control. And in that, faith community plays a vital role, but also relationships are very, very key. One of the best things that happened after the fire was on the Saturday after the fire, where London Citizens, a sort of umbrella organisation, had rung us all up and said, "We're going to have a meeting at the parish church, 4 o'clock, be there if you can." And had invited a number of organisations to come, and about 20 of us were there from local voluntary organisations, many of them from the faith community. And we all went round and simply didn't do anything for an hour, but simply say who we were and how we felt about things. You didn't get past introductions. People had so much they wanted to get off their chest. But as a result of that, we all had each other's mobile phone numbers and a WhatsApp group and an email address for everybody else. And for days afterwards, hundreds of WhatsApp messages came in every single day saying, "What do I do with this? What do I do with that? Have you got this? Do you know what's happening with X? Who do I contact about this?" And all these answers kept flying around, and it meant that very, very quickly there was a very, very good network of information sharing that was set up, which people could trust, and it proved to be absolutely invaluable. And I think I've said about buildings and organization. One of the it sounds odd, but one of the great things about churches, you have a structure. I know you may not think of churches having wonderful structures, and in Notting Hill, let me tell you, our structure is not exactly kind of brilliant. But we do have things like a bank account, and we have phone lines, and we have the ability for people to leave messages for each other. And if people want to hand out money to so and so, we've got a mechanism for doing that. So people would walk into our church and give us phenomenal amounts of money in the first few days. Thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds, none of which we ever asked for, but they gave because they trusted us. And they also knew that we would have a bank account and we'd be able to account for it and we got audited and all those kinds of things. Many of the organisations in the local community, they don't have those things at all. They're very small little sort of set up organisations. They don't have trustees or policies or procedures or bank accounts. And so they don't qualify for any of those things. Nobody will give them money. Whereas we were, and other faith community organisations, seen as organisations which could be used then to route money to particular people or to particular organisations, and still were being used in that way. One example would be a local choir that was set up after the Grenfell Tower fire, which still doesn't have its own proper kind of choir structure. It's merely there for a kind of well-being sing experience. So, you know, 18 months on, I'm still paying, you know, the musical director and other people, and it gets all routed through our bank account, simply as a way in which people can then get the benefits of this this choir working. And I suppose the other thing we've learned is that trauma is a very amplifying experience, amplifying factor. So if I tell you about a number of people I've got to know in the local community who have been profoundly disturbed by the fire and still often walk into the church and tell me or message me on how well or how badly their day is going. But I'm aware that actually before the fire, they were only just coping with all kinds of mental health issues, substance abuse issues, relationship issues, and many other things. And what the trauma of the fire does has simply lowered everyone's resilience to those kinds of things. So people who were just about coping, and there were many in North Kensington who were only just coping before the fire, now are very much not coping. And indeed, for many months, didn't seek help because they knew the people who really needed the help were the people who'd been in Grenfell Tower itself. So they would not come forward because they lived next door to Grenfell Tower. Or they lived in a flat, you know, a few yards away. Or it was their relatives that they'd spoken to on the night of the fire, but they themselves didn't feel they were a priority. And so a year, 18 months on, a lot more people are now coming forward for screening by the health service, because it's now they've now been aware that actually they are in profound state of need, really, for psychological assistance. And I suspect the trauma has also affected, you know, the volunteers, the community organisations as well, which then puts strain on them. I don't know how bad your church council meetings may be in your circuit, in this circuit. My memory is they weren't particularly... Well, maybe that's rose-tinted spectacles, I don't know. But my memory is they weren't particularly bad, but blimey. Let me tell you, some meetings in my area, they are terrible. And indeed, some of our church meetings, some local community meetings are terrible. People are very badly behaved. They have very, very short fuses. And that's the product of a number of things. But certainly a big factor in that, I think, has been the trauma of the fire. People are very, very impatient and angry. And therefore they get impatient and angry with each other as well. Next one. I think I can whiz through this fairly quickly. Except that we strangely seem to be in the position of being regarded as authorities and experts in all kinds of things. So we are deluged with researchers wanting to write books, write memos, do papers, do their postgraduate thesis on something or other about the community response. And often I feel like saying, well, I'm sure you're in a better position to know these things than actually we are. Because when you're in the middle of it, you don't take notes and you don't really have a sense of what other people are doing. But I think some of the bigger funerals and events have been quite significant, like the St. Paul's service, and the way in which the faith community gets asked to be involved in them. For, as I said earlier, for, you know, nearly 30 years I've been a minister. Certainly for some of those years, I've done everything possible to try and reassure people that I may be a minister, but I'm all right, really. You know, I do not have two heads. The people in my church do not have two heads. That we are normal, you know, because we are often marginalised, I feel, by secular society, and therefore we are often belittled, or we are ridiculed, or in small ways. But you know, the way to get yourself, you know, a spare seat on a train is to wear a dog collar. You know, believe me, it works. It does work. And then to find that in this particular community, actually, no, that people will cross the road to shake your hand because you're wearing a dog collar, or because they think you represent part of the faith community. And not just me, but lots of people in the local community. Because there's so much affirmation of the faith community because of the kind of area it is and the role that the faith community has played in the aftermath of the Grenfell Tower fire. And it strikes me as that there's a profound opportunity there, actually, for people engaging with matters of faith. But it is a strange, topsy-turvy dynamic from what I've actually been used to in the past. So we get asked to be involved in a lot of the things that normally you wouldn't expect to be involved in, if it's some of the campaigning work, or it's some of the publicity, or it's some of the anniversary events. So, you know, a few weeks after the Grenfell Tower fire, Robin Williams, who was then the local police chief, walks up to me and says, very early one morning, she says, "Mike, how are we going to start carnival then?" Okay. I am new to the area. I have never been to Notting Hill Carnival. But the local police are asking, you know, a local religious figure for assistance because they realise there's a problem. We have a huge hullabaloo of a very lively festival, but it's a few months after a Grenfell Tower fire. So how do we get the tone right? And when we're asking those kind of questions, often they come to the Muslims and to the Christians for help with such things, as they've continued to do so ever since. And we still get invited to a whole host of meetings by the health service and by many others to actually either be involved in our host meetings. I could bore you with the details, but we get involved in the fabric of community life in ways that have been quite unexpected and remarkable. Next one. Sorry, Kevin, I could talk for hours, but some slides just of the St. Paul's service, which now feels like a very long, long time ago. And one of the most remarkable events that actually you could have a national service for something like this, at which Muslims would feel that they were invited and part of, to have a Muslim girls' choir singing in the service. And I only found out a few months ago how much flack the St. Paul's Cathedral staff had for making that call, and indeed some of the opposition that came from very, very, very senior Anglican clergy. I won't say who it is, but you can perhaps guess when I say that, who had been less than entirely pleased with the direction that the service was taking. And again, it's an example, I think, of how actually, if it's done flexibly and imaginatively, how actually something like this can actually bring people together in a very, very powerful way. Next slide just shows you, I think, some pictures that were taken outside. That's the Catholic priest and the interfaith coordinator for the local mosque, who sadly died very suddenly a few months ago. Next one. And that's people on the steps, as often they do, carrying pictures of people who were killed in the Tower fire. I know quite obviously quite a few people who are in the pictures. Next one. Oh, the future. Issues, I'll just say the issues, then you can ask me questions if you've still got the energy. Issues, how to rehouse hundreds of homeless families. 204, I think, was the total of households that needed to be housed. Because many people lived in overcrowded accommodation, several households might be in the same flat. So then when the flat is destroyed, then people say, well, actually, you know, there's been seven of us in actually a two-bedroom flat. Actually, if we're going to be rehoused, could we actually be rehoused in separate households? And all those questions have had to be looked at. So although only about 180-odd flats were destroyed, there are 204 households from Grenfell Tower alone that need to be housed, as well as people in the local walkway flats that have needed to be evacuated and rehoused as well. All the issues about the public inquiry and the criminal investigation. And although this isn't hitting the news an awful lot, on the ground these things take up an enormous amount of time and emotional energy. The public inquiry team are frequently on the ground. They hold a surgery in our church every month, for instance, for people dropping in, asking all kinds of questions about the process, how they can be involved, how the community is going to be consulted, how the tone is going to be right, how to minimise distress to people and so on. The issues of community trauma and help for them. So another little example. When The Guardian prints on its front page, as it did in September, and I have to take issue with The Guardian here, I think a very badly timed and inappropriate expose of a toxicology report that was several months old as to contamination, soil contamination around the Grenfell Tower site. What happens in the local community is absolute furore, because people feel they've been betrayed. They have been assured by Public Health England that the air is safe to breathe, the air is safe to breathe, the water is safe to drink, we can still take our kids to the local school, we can still grow our own vegetables outside, you know, on our balconies and so on. And now you're telling us the soil is contaminated, but you won't tell us the results. People get incredibly scared and very, very angry. And so I was asked, just because that's part of the faith community, asked to host, you know, a meeting of several hundred people and people from Public Health England to try and answer some of the multitude of questions that something like that produces. So it just needs a very small spark for everything to go woof. And it takes weeks for things to then start to calm down again. The issue of the Grenfell Tower site. When I talk to people outside London, they presume the Grenfell Tower has been demolished. It's all over. The tower is still there. It's going to be there for years, I suspect. The government is about to announce in the next few months a commission to look at the future of the tower itself and what will happen to it. Who will own it? The site, that is, the land. How will it be managed? Will there be a memorial? If so, what kind of memorial? Will there be housing? If so, what kind of housing? And they've set up a commission of people from the local community and the bereaved and survivors who will decide those things. But it's going to take a long time. It's going to take a year for the commission to work, and I suspect several years after that for anything actually then to be implemented. Just demolishing the tower itself is going to take a very long time. It's very, very close to lots of existing flats and a school and a leisure centre. It's how on earth it's going to be done without massive disruption, I can't tell. But for the community who live nearby, they're looking at 5 years of ongoing disruption, to put it mildly, I suspect. That's how they see it, with this unfolding. I've talked about the money already, I think, and how the churches continue to get involved in the local community and how we develop partnerships together in ways that build on the very tragic opportunity that's actually emerged. And how actually then the churches can be more, not only be more focused in terms of their mission, but also perhaps more clear about what they stand for and what they're about in the local community. What's interesting is, to give you an example, we decided to put some Christmas trees the first Christmas outside the church, brighten up the local area, get the council to pay for them, which they did, and in a very stark and bleak, It's an awful lot of grey concrete around North Kensington. This would just brighten up the area. And immediately we were hit with, you know, the usual, you know, well, what would the Muslims think? Well, we knew what the Muslims think. They love it. They love Christmas. And they do. They really love Christmas. And they love all our festivals. And, you know, there's a huge sense of goodwill between the Christian and Muslim communities. And there is much fruit, I think, for showing that actually people can have very different faiths, which sometimes have points of convergence and sometimes points of real contrast and difference. But yet, they do not mean that people need to be in conflict in society. And the narrative we have in Britain is that usually, you know, religion causes wars. You know, different religions, you have all these people fighting and all that kind of stuff. I have to tell you, in North Kensington, it's the opposite. Faith is something that brings people together in a very productive and a very constructive and compassionate way. Next slide. I think I've just got pictures now. Another spin-off is simply the concern locally for people who live in social housing. it was a huge eye-opener for me, moving into North Kensington and noticing the pressures on housing locally. I didn't know a lot about the local community, but I knew enough when the fire happened to make a few probably unguarded comments about overcrowding in the local community and the conditions that many of the local people experienced. So Shelter, on the back of that, I think, asked me to be involved in a commission on social housing, which produced its report a few weeks ago, but was very much prompted by the Grenfell Tower fire. And we heard all these responses from people around the country saying, well, you know, in Grenfell Tower, people said they protested about this and they made mentioned all these safety concerns, which were ignored. But we feel that too in the block where I live, or I've also got concerns about this. Or I also feel I'm not being listened to by my landlord or by our housing association or the council or whatever it is. And there was a realisation that actually this is a much more widespread feeling amongst so many, many hundreds of thousands of people. And so the Shelter Commission report was launched and is still gathering momentum in sort of a petition and ongoing campaign simply to build more housing, and especially to build more social housing and to have more regulation. And that's something which has a very strong resonance in the local community as we go forward. So that's something that I've been involved with, but not because of me, simply because I happen to be minister of the local church, which happened to be on the spot next to Grenfell Tower. Next one. That's the statue I think I've shown you already, so we can move on from that. And I think that's quite poignant, which is now on a wall very close to Grenfell Tower. And people still continue to scrawl messages. And although for many this is an old news story, 18 months, more, 20 months ago, for people who are local, it is still a very much a daily reality, and people can't escape it. Next one. And as I said, every 14th, people continue to march. That's probably taken many, many months ago now. And occasionally they ask the faith leaders to stand on the front row. They haven't done that for a while. But they want us to be front and centre, and indeed anybody they think who will get the media attention or looks important, perhaps. And most 14ths I join in. They meet outside our church, because our church is a known location, and it's got a bit of space outside, and we have good toilets. And good toilets is a real form of ministry, because we have, I mean, on busy days, we can have 100 people using the loos before the march begins, and we've got a wheelchair, and people can charge their phones, and then come and sit in the warm, and if they're really nice to us, they might get a cup of coffee. And those small, very small acts of hospitality sometimes actually go quite a long way in actually building up relationships, and people know that we're actually on their side. Doesn't mean we agree with everything that they do, but it means that we're actually there for the community. Next one. And one of the more poignant things about the march is that the firefighters turn out from the local fire station, which was the first fire station to attend the Grenfell Tower fire. And how they get through it, I don't know, but an awful lot of the people then hug the firefighters. Firefighters locally are regarded as the real heroes, and I would agree with that. This may not be the watch that was actually on the night. It's whatever watch is on turns out for the event. But the local firefighters, many of whom live in social housing or have been brought up in the local area themselves, are regarded as one of us very strongly by the local community. Next one. I think it's the last one. Oh, just a memorial. And again, on the evening of the 14th, we find still loads of candles outside our church that are still being freshly lit, fresh teddy bears being placed there. And that was a few months ago. And next one, I think that's... Oh, and just to give an example of the kind of burgeoning art stuff that's going on at a memorial outside Grenfell Tower. Local groups have been asked to produce a petal. You can see three on there, love, hope and unity. And they've all been asked to produce a petal, one a month, which is added to this, so that by June we'll have 12 petals all the way around this central mosaic. Then there's other bits that are going to be added to it. Every month a different community organisation gets invited to actually produce one. And we got asked to be one of those 12 organisations. I was immensely proud that they'd wanted us to be part of this. So the next picture, I think, shows some of us. Our church showed the word respect and shows some of our church people, including me and Susie, helping to make this, which I was amazed at how good and how therapeutic an exercise it is. And firefighters and other churches, the mosque, other community centres have been asked to take part in this as well. And there's a whole host of that kind of thing going on all the time. Again, those means of expression which help people to either do something or to pray something which says, this is our community and we want to remember all those people from Grenfell Tower. Next one. I think, yeah, that just shows some of the people making it. But obviously not me. And that's the bottom of the statue, which just has the date 14/6/17, and I think last one. Yeah, that's just the last one. We have a huge banner outside the church, largely because we have scaffolding. It looks really bare. So we put up a massive picture of Grenfell, the Grenfell Heart, which is about, it's about half the size of this wall, I suppose. It is fairly big, which has stayed there. And when the scaffolding comes down, we'll remove and store somewhere. I think I've talked for far too long. Do you have any questions? I'm sorry. What? I can't hear you, Ian. I'm sorry. Banksy. Did he do anything? I'm not aware, but there are many people who were celebrities locally who did do an extraordinary amount, often unsung, I have to say. People like Adele, Marcus Mumford, some others made more of a name for themselves and got themselves rather unpopular. But others like them, some of whom had very strong local collections, in fact, Les Ferdinand would be another, and just mucked in. One of my a neighbour to the church, she lives next door to the church, is a famous radio presenter and ex-pop singer. I'm best not naming her. But she's a very known celebrity. And she just mucked in, like everybody else in the building, and just got on with things. And some people did that. But some people have also been able to use their status to actually help attract funding, for instance, from various charitable organisations, which has been helpful.
I just wondered how far scattered the survivors are now, and will they ever have any chance of getting back to their community?
That's a really interesting question. Most of the survivors are housed in the borough about a mile or two away. They were housed in hotels that were very nearby. I mean, they were scattered. And one of the issues for us in the first few weeks was the number of people who... There was no coordination. They were... of people being, and even families were separated sometimes by this. But most were relatively local. The rehousing they've tried to do it within the local borough, but of course, there's very little housing in Kensington and Chelsea, indeed. So it's been quite difficult. Some people have wanted to move out the area altogether, but a lot want to remain at least relatively near, not least because a lot of them have got kids in schools. They want to hold on to their jobs, and the vast majority of people in Grenfell Tower were working, actually. So they belong to the local community, and they want to stay part of the community. It was a very tight-knit community. So lots of people, for instance, in Grenfell Tower, had people who would babysit for them, who lived in the walkways nearby. And quite a few people in the walkways used to live in Grenfell Tower, and I've met quite a lot of people locally who used to live in Grenfell Tower and then moved into other accommodation locally. So there's huge friendship and kinship ties in the immediate community around Grenfell Tower. The difficulty is moving back, and although one or two live very close, indeed within eyesight of the tower that I know of, most probably won't be able to be part of that local community, and that again creates tensions because their world has moved on in the most terrible kind of way. But the people who are left behind around Grenfell feel they've been left and abandoned. All these other people are getting all the housing. It's not necessarily true, but they feel all these other people are getting all the attention, all the focus, all the money, all the care, and we're left here with nothing. And one of the things that the church is trying to do is also support people locally. So people from Grenfell Tower who are being housed are being well housed, I think, by and large. I mean, trying to find the right accommodation is difficult, but are being well treated. But I came across one about 3 or 4 weeks ago, who were in the walkways very close to Grenfell Tower. A lady with 4 children, single mum, 4 children, ranging from 10 to 22 in years, who's being rehoused in a place where the flooring is terrible, but she has no cooker. And the RBKC would not provide a cooker. So they're putting it into a place, no cooker. So we scratched and we managed to provide the route whereby the funding could be given, as I said earlier, through us, and then, you know, from somewhere else, and we were able to then give her the money for the cooker. But that's the disparity. And I understand some of the reasons for that, but it does create tensions.
Is whether you wouldn't rather still be in Haringey or London then?
Well, it's not down to me, really, is it? I think it's fair to say, on public record, the 6 years we spent in London were not the happiest, and I think probably we felt a bit like a fish out of water. We loved being in North London, in Haringey, and as a family, it was lovely. We would have been very happy to stay there. Personally speaking, I've probably never felt as convinced of being a minister as I do now. But that's partly a product of the fire, but it's probably, I think, I'd have felt that anyway in the kind of... I mean, the church is chaotic and in a mess and all kinds of other issues locally. And so I feel there's a real job to do there. And hopefully I can do something that's useful there. So I've never felt... It does feel very right for me to be there. That doesn't mean that it hasn't been right elsewhere, and that's just a personal feeling. But that's more about me and my job rather than, for instance, how the rest of the family might feel, for instance. I can't speak for them. But in the end, it's not down to us, and how long we stay here will probably not be down to us either. That's the way Methodism works.
Just one more then. Wait for the mic.
I'm thinking here, right? Something just happened on Grenfell Tower. If I was a minister and I wouldn't know where to start to pray, I just wouldn't know how to pray, where to start, who do you pray for, what people do you pray for. I just wouldn't have a clue where to ever start. It's just an amazing thing, what you've got to do.
Okay, a question about prayer. I think what's important is to be honest. And often we don't know what to pray. I don't know what to pray for. And I think it goes back to the openness and giving people a space. So like the vigils, I mean, what do you say after something like that? When the fire's first going on, we think hundreds of people have died. I mean, 72 is bad enough. I mean, you know, I've been in Grenfell Tower. You know, I've seen the destruction that's gone on. It's horrific. It's absolutely horrific in the place. You know, I've seen, well, all kinds of things no one should really see. And there aren't any words that actually help you with that. And I think some of the most profound things is simply to say, we don't have answers to those things. It's helping you know what to pray for or what to offer to God, except that you give a space to do that. And sometimes singing things or reading passages from Scripture help. And sometimes it's about being silent. But I think often it's the case of lots of people joining together is actually very supportive. So the silent marches, where you can hear a pin drop, by the way. It's not like lots of Christian marches I've been on, Good Friday stuff, before, where people natter under their breath. You can hear a pin drop. And 2 minute silences, there are often silences in meetings and so on that go on. And sometimes occasions when people come together for special services, I think they help. But I suppose the ultimate prayer is that God somehow works in it, even if we don't know what that will look like entirely. So people talk about things like justice and healing and reconciliation. And I mean, I do agree with all those things. But there's got to be other things that happen first. And I think sometimes what happens before you can talk about all those other kind of things is that people simply need to have a feeling of that, or getting this stuff off their chest, really. And I think locally there's still a lot of that has to be done. Before then, people are in a position where they're actually able to listen or to receive things or to look at things in any kind of different way. That's my best shot at it anyway, Ian.
Thank you very much, Mike. Okay. We've had some good questions, but thank you for a very profound review, really, of all the work that you've done, and a very profound insight into the community and the effects that Grenfell has had on the community. I think all of us here would agree that it's also affected those of us who've just been on the outside looking at the media. So we want to just thank you very much for giving up your time and coming to talk to us tonight. We're very grateful, and I think we'd like to show our appreciation.